You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
The National Fraternity says it is embarrassed by the unacceptable and racist behavior. Some students are also upset.
For people that might have went to my high school that are now in that organization, it moves me to tears. That's how you, like, really view us.
That was student Anika Abbey. Two key senators say they've made significant progress on a bipartisan effort to update the No Child Left Behind law. They're hoping it will be ready for committee action in mid-April. Congress for 2 years has been stymied on the best way to improve the law with widespread consequences for U.S. classrooms. This is USA Radio News.
I like my breakfast like I like my rock. Soft. So I eat Belveeta Soft Baked Breakfast Biscuits, a tasty breakfast option for nutritious morning energy. It's just what I want before writing a flute solo that will softly rock every dentist's office around. Try Belveeta Soft Baked in oats and chocolate, cinnamon, mixed berry, and banana bread. Belveeta, mourn and win.
A tech titan reveals its latest device. AP correspondent Matt Small reports.
Apple says its new gadget, the Apple Watch, is its most personal device yet. And industry watchers are eager to see if Apple's take on the timepiece will have consumers wrapping it around their wrists. More details about the smartwatch, which is set to retail at about $350 and up, and when it will go on sale will be announced later today. I'm Matt Small.
A woman who lost her legs in the Boston Marathon bombing has taken the witness stand for the third day of testimony in Johar Tsarnaev's federal death penalty trial. Jessica Kenzie entered the courtroom in a wheelchair and told jurors her left leg was amputated right after the bombing. Her right leg was amputated in January. In the first 2 days of testimony, prosecutors called more than a dozen witnesses, including several marathon spectators who described losing limbs. A lawyer for a 17-year-old Connecticut girl forced to undergo chemotherapy by the state says her cancer appears to be in remission. The assistant public defender said the girl's recent medical scan showed no signs of Hodgkin's lymphoma. The girl was identified in documents as Cassandra C. She remains confined to a Hartford hospital room. A court hearing is scheduled for next week on whether Cassandra should remain in the custody of the state. A judge granted the agency temporary custody in November after Cassandra refused chemo. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
The weather today, this afternoon, is going to be sunny with a high near 50 degrees. Northwest winds around 8 miles per hour. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 27 and light and variable winds. Tuesday, a chance of snow. That S word again. And it'll be before noon, and then rain likely, mostly cloudy, with a high near 43, calm winds, and the chance of precipitation is 60%. There'll be little or no snow accumulation expected. Tuesday night, Rain likely, mainly before 8 p.m., cloudy with a low around 33, calm winds, chance of precipitation is again 60%, and the new precipitation amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch of rain possible. Wednesday is going to be partly sunny with a high near 53, calm winds becoming northwest around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon, and Wednesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 31. Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and this is NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, in New Jersey, we are all volunteers. We have no office. We work out of our homes. We use our own computers, our own telephones, etc. And what we try to do is help people or families who have someone in their family with a mental health issue, or they have a mental health issue and are trying to go on with their lives. And we do it by education. In fact, my wife and I are teaching a 12-week course right now, which just started last week. And it's everything we do in NAMI is free. Every course you want to take or anything you want to do is always free. We have what they call a basics course for families who have young children who are suffering from some sort of mental health issues. And we are, before I go on, I have to remember, although I'm going to totally forget, I have to wish my daughter a happy birthday. It is her birthday today, and I know that she's probably at work and won't listen until later on, but I can legitimately say I said happy birthday to her. So happy birthday, Sherry. We are very privileged today to have with us Noemi Bolton, who is a licensed clinical social worker. She has a master's in social work, and she's practicing a psychotherapist. Noemi, it's wonderful to have you here. I'm glad you came. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I have to ask, how long have you been practicing in this field?
In this field, particularly in psychotherapy, since 2007.
Okay.
But I've been in this field in terms of application of the techniques I'm using since the 1980s.
A long time then.
Mm-hmm.
30 plus years.
Yes.
Wow. You don't look it, I got to tell you.
Thank you.
You know, I find that between NAMI and doing presentations and the radio show, that a lot of people wind up in a particular area of work, either through personal experience or family experience or something like that. And I was just curious, why did you enter this type of work?
My first career was in the computers. I have a double master's degree, one in computers and then the social work.
And I was talking to you about computers before, and I was telling you I do the one finger thing
right,
with the
right.
So yeah, you're way ahead of me with that.
Right.
You're
so,
more in my son's league.
Yeah.
You know?
But anyway, I actually had three careers: one in computers, and then I stayed at home for 15 years. So it was a big switch in functioning, organismic functioning, where I used a lot of mental capacity to do my job in IT. And then when I raised the children and I stayed at home, it was more the emotional side of me that had to be challenged. So it was a big shift. And then after they were grown, I was thinking of what to do next in my life as a career. So I thought about going probably back to my career and then teaching. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. My friends had been talking with me, asking me questions, and became an informal counselor. So I said, why don't I make
a career out of it and get paid for it?
So that's what I did.
Okay.
I went back to school.
That's interesting. I just find it interesting how people, come about doing what they do,
But in terms of that, though, I came from a different country, and it was a big culture shock for me. So I went through a lot of transformations over time.
That's understandable.
So understanding the internal changes on a personal level, I thought the importance of having that an asset.
It is. It's, and I can understand that. It's, I was talking to someone from California.
Yes.
And she suffers from bipolar.
Yes.
And she called on the radio, on the radio show, but on the phone. And we were talking, and she said the same thing, that, you know, coming from a different background, a different country, and, you know, coming to this country, the adjustment, although it's easy, is not easy, if you know what I'm saying. It's like,
that's,
you know, it might be easier if you're from Europe or something like that than it would be, you know, because she's Asian,
yes.
You know, and it's different. The cultures are different. The, you know, structure is different. And so I understand perfectly what you're saying, you know, because we've become fairly close friends, you know, communicate back and forth and so on and so forth. So now I know from going on websites and so on and so forth that you cover a number of different traumas.
That's correct.
Would you briefly go over them for me? For everybody?
Yes. There's several. We go different levels of trauma, whether they are, I wouldn't want to say superficial, but there's layers of trauma, whether it's situational or deep-seated trauma.
Okay.
So when we talk about deep-seated trauma, where that's my specialty. So I would go back through prolonged exposure therapy techniques. We go back there to really see the sexual, whether it was sexual, physical abuse, emotional abuse, they're all intertwined somehow. The interesting part about it is that I also deal with the predatory, which is kind of like tough because which point of view are you going to be taking, the victims or the victim or the
aggressor,
defendant.
Yeah.
Yeah, the aggressor.
Right. When you talk about sexual abuse, do you find that it's mainly women or are men abused too?
There was a discussion about that because it's hard to say that we are, well, abuse in terms when they were little, there could be different forms of abuse when they were little.
Right.
It could have been that it's the parent, so it's a male-male when we're looking at the male victim,
right.
Male-male or female-male.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, it's ironic. I've gotten friendly with a young man. He's a little younger than I am, so everybody's a young man after that, you know. But he's up in New Hampshire. And he and his two brothers, his mother and father, ran a child sex ring and used the three brothers in that ring.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked him one time why it took him so long to protest it and, you know, voice anger at it and so on and so forth. And his statement shocked me because he says, who was I supposed to go to? The pastor of the church that we all went to, and most of the people in the church were part of this ring. It's a small town. And he says, there's three or four police officers. They were all involved in it. He says, who was I? Teachers in the school were involved in it. He says, who was I supposed to go to? There was nobody to go to, you know, until I got older and left.
And left the town.
Yeah, and left
the
town.
The state.
Well, he's still up in the state, but he left the town and left, you know, that. And ironically and sadly enough, his two brothers couldn't handle it, and they committed suicide at a young age, early 20s. And he now goes around, he's a musician, and he goes around and does presentations to people suffering from trauma and sexual abuse and so on and so forth, and intertwines music in with it and so on and so forth. And it's really, you know, it really bothers me that a parent could do that to their child, you know. And yes, I understand they may not, you know, they're not well and they're ill and everything, but still, it's their child, you know, and that just bothers me.
There's a lot of sexual repression around. Society is really sexually negative sexually in terms of expression. So when it's dampened, the sexual energy is dampened, it's not gratified, it leaks out somehow, somewhere.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing as the big problem with the Catholic Church where, you know, it's from one's point of view, it's unnatural to keep that energy low or not even gratified. So where does it leak out to? Pedophile,
yeah,
being a pedophile.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's sad. It really is. You know, is this type of thing, pardon me, that this fella has gone through and is going through, is this more of a problem than we realize?
Which one is the problem? From that predator's
From
point
either
of
the
view,
predators or the, yes. Or the abused person.
Both, actually, they both suffer. They both suffer because the predator once also was a victim.
Okay.
Could also have been a victim, yes. The percentage of the predator being a victim is high.
It is high.
Yes. So it's generational.
And it's like an endless cycle, isn't it?
Yes. So it's the responsibility of one person who's aware of it is very, it's very involved. It's a big responsibility. It's huge responsibility for the person to stop the generational.
Right. Because, it just sounds like it, you know, it's an endless cycle. Because if the parent was abused, then they're going to, I don't say always, but sometimes abuse the child. And the child grows up and he abuses and it's like an endless thing.
That's
correct. Just sad.
Yes, it's very sad.
It seems like there's more that we could do as a society, as a population to stop this, You know what I mean?
Education, it's like, yes. Like, for example, now that we are on the air, that's an aspect of having to address this kind of problem and being aware of it and work with it, work with the population, whoever are the victims or even...
Well, that's what we talk about with mental health issues, too.
That's right.
You know, if people had cancer, if my son had cancer, everybody say, oh, what a shame, Larry, can we help you? You tell him he's schizophrenic and everybody takes two steps back and doesn't want anything to do with it because they're afraid it's either catching or whatever. And, you know, so that's why I do the show. Fortunately, the show got recognized by the Governor's Council on mental health stigma.
I heard that.
And we got an award, which is fine. I mean, I'm not me award, but the show got the award. And, you know, which is good because any way you can get the word out about something like that, you know, it helps.
It's significant.
Right, exactly. Some people may have a problem understanding emotional abuse. Could you describe what that is?
Emotional abuse could take in the form of verbal abuse, the effects of the verbal abuse or manipulative techniques that they use. They don't even know. They're not aware that they're doing it. It's because, it's generational. I will hurt you. I will hurt your mom. I will hurt your sister. Those are, you impose fear. You inflict fear on the person.
Hmm.
The individual.
And that, I would assume...
Not to think about, not to even address the financial control of the...
Okay, yeah. That's what I was thinking, like financial control, mm-hmm. or, you know, here you can have $10 a week and don't
right.
spend more than that, and,
right.
you know, yada, yada, and you can't have the car, or, you know, or whatever, it's... That falls under emotional also?
That's we separate the fine. It goes with it because there's a fear of the person, the controller, and the person being controlled, they don't know how to assert themselves. Okay, I'm staying at home. I'm not being recognized by even society that I am a productive part of
right.
society by taking care of the kids. There's still that line of thinking where women are supposed to stay at home and not have social life or not when
yeah,
they're taking
no,
care
I understand
of
what you're saying. It's just, you know, I know that a lot of times back a few years, it wasn't looked favorably upon for women to go to work and, that's, you know, yes, so on and so forth. But in this day and age, in order to survive, I think most parents have to both work, you know, in order to survive. But
it's still a patriarchal society somehow.
There's, yeah, no, I agree. I agree. You know, I think still deep down, it's like, I don't know if it's the male would like to see the woman stay at home and be the mom, like, you know, his mom or her, his grandmother or whatever. But it just seems like it's, it just doesn't seem like it's going away, you know?
No, most especially when the women are sexually repressed somehow. They're not allowed to go to the job. They're not allowed to be expressive of themselves for fear that they're going to see or meet someone else out there. So
right,
there's still
right,
a control there.
Right. And, you know, and the male, I think, in some cases that I've heard of and saw and various things, tell them how to dress.
Right.
You know, tell them what they can wear, what they can't wear, how to wear their hair, how they can't wear their
that's
hair.
That's right.
And it's like, you know,
it's still out there, yes.
You know, my wife does her thing and she, with her hair, and she'll say, what do you think? I think it looks great. You know, it looks awesome. And I mean it. You know, it looks fine. You know, I want dinner tonight. You know, so if I don't tell you it looks good, I'm going to have to cook my own. And I'm terrible at cooking. So whatever looks, whatever trips your trigger, honey, you know, that's why I guess we've been married 50 years. You know.
Where do we think we learned politics?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's, but there are things, you know, you say, whoa, wait a minute, you know, you like that? You know, like something, a dress or something, or she wear. But most of the time, it's like, I look at it, and I guess maybe I'm not the average person, but I look at it, if you like it, so what? Wear it. You know, what do I don't have to approve it, you know. And
well, you are one of the different
and
species.
Vice versa. Yeah. You know, I mean, if I'm wearing something and you don't like it, you can say, gee, you know, really, you shouldn't have to wear that, you know, change it or give it away or something, you know. But it's not like you can't go out because you're wearing that. No, you know, I mean, I don't care. You want to wear it that way? Fine. Knock yourself out, you know.
Okay. So you're not the controlling type.
No, not at all. You know? But I want dinner at night. You know?
Good one, too.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be a good one. It could just be soup and a sandwich. And that's fine, okay. You know. But I understand that domestic violence, actual physical violence and any kind of domestic violence, that has to cause long-lasting trauma.
That's correct.
And, you know, how do you explain the different types of trauma? I mean, is there different types of trauma?
Oh, there are some vicious traumas. I mean, the different types of abuse that's even more vicious, more poisonous. That's the mental abuse. Mm-hmm. I'd rather know that I am abused physically rather than mentally abused, because mm-hmm. Mental abuse is not easily detected. I don't really know whether or not my mom and dad abused me in terms of this way of thinking. I don't even know that this is a dysfunctional way of thinking. This is just what they did in the household that I didn't really know that that was what it was.
Right.
But then when we go into new relationship when we're in our 20s and 30s, whoa, it doesn't apply anymore.
Mm-hmm.
About how I was treated or how the dynamics was in my family of origin, then I question things now.
Yeah, but now that can have an effect on their lives now. I mean, in their 30s and 40s, whatever, mm-hmm. Because it wasn't quote unquote treated back when
right.
they were younger.
So it could come out as a form of addiction in terms of other things. Such abuse could be the abuse could have been hidden.
Okay.
Emotional impact of it could have been hidden, pushed down by certain types of addiction. Maybe now I am going to deaden these emotions as effects by drinking alcohol, by taking drugs, by being a sex addict too. What else are the other forms? Gambling, perhaps, to get a high from all the depression that I had. Even the depression, they're all like intertwined type of disorders. They call it disorders, but I really don't want to say that they are disorders. They are just a manifestation of the deeper misery.
Right.
That they had to go through.
You know, and as I would assume from what you're saying, that this is more common than the average person realizes.
That's right. I just work with someone who had been open. Well, the oldest one that I worked with was, he kept the secret for 50 some years from.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was in his 70s, and then he was watching an Oprah show where a woman wrote a book about the abuse, sexual abuse by the father, and at a certain point she enjoyed it until she realized it later on that it wasn't right. So he was watching this show, and he was hospitalized by realizing, well, wait a minute, this is my time to really address this before. I don't know whether his age prompted him to say, I've got to get these skeletons out of my closet now before I die.
That's very possible. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we will be back in just a few moments, so hang in there.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel, iron.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend and
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. their tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to forwardnewjersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Are you tired of the limitations of your small office shredder? Do you need to be compliant with federal regulations regarding the disposal of sensitive information? Are you concerned about identity theft? If so, then call AssureShred. AssureShred will provide your company customized on-site document destruction service that fulfills regulatory requirements and at the same time protects your organization from the consequences of the improper disposal of sensitive information. To obtain a free quote or to schedule an appointment, call AssureShred at 877-466-1566 today. That's 877-466-1566.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we are very privileged today to have with us Noemi Bolton, who is a licensed clinical social worker. She also has a master's in social work, and she also is a practicing psychotherapist. And we've been talking about some of the traumas and emotional abuse and violence and domestic violence and so on and so forth. And we were talking during the break that more and more it's coming out, the BDSM that you were talking about. How does this come out? I mean, as people come to your and talk about it, or is it like in group things? That how is it, you know, how do you find out that it's now rising, you know?
I don't know whether it's a phenomenon because of the book that was written. The book that was written about BDSM, the 50 Shades of Grey, and it's now in a movie form.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that has an impact at all with the population, but there were a lot of studies that were done, most especially in California at one time, to study what is that culture is all about. But usually when people get into that kind of pattern, a sex behavioral pattern, it's just the sexual part that they jump start the relationship sexually. No emotional contact. It's just the word F, I mean the letter F.
Uh-huh.
So there's really no loving contact, no gentleness and all. It's a very harsh way of contact. You might want to say it's contact, but it's really harsh contact.
Right, right.
Yeah, so but it would seem to indicate that a lot of parts of the population are sexually starved, and that's a way to get directly to the gratifying some sexual need that hasn't been gratified for a while. But is that the real way of having contact with a real human being?
It just seems like there's no emotion involved in it or anything. You know, it's
that's
all
right.
You know,
right.
Now when someone has, you know, goes through this and they get into pornography, is it because of what they suffered or went through as a child?
There could be a connection there. Usually from the studies that I've read is that they had some trauma in when they were young. Most special one case, very noted case, is that the child was going back and forth to the hospital, and he was always injected in different medical devices were injected in him, pricking him with needles and all that. So that was constant in his life, so that it didn't bother him. It
became a way of life for him.
It was a way of life, and he was in a bubble, and he was exhibited somehow, you know, naked when he was a child.
Right.
You know, they strip him naked to make him survive or get him going with until he was in his 20s or 30s. I forgot his name, but so that in terms of repeating that pattern, he would be in he would be exhibited somehow. They have these gatherings where
right.
they would put all kinds of needles or something like that, and a cross or you know, bizarre positions.
Right, very bizarre. And you have mentioned that in the Philippines also that there was a lot of rape and sex trafficking and stuff.
Yeah, the human trafficking. It's a matter of supply and demand. When there's a demand, there's a supply. They try to find where the supply is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they just go into villages, though, don't they? And they just take the women or whatever.
Right.
Or, you know, it's not that they're. I don't think most of the women don't volunteer and say, "Oh, take me." I mean, it's like, you know.
For financial reasons.
For financial reasons,
yeah,
okay.
It's a developing country. And the Soviet Union, when the Soviet uh-huh. Union was dismantled, some of these independent countries now, you know, they're coming out. It's that's also the concentration of where the women and children, boys come from.
Yeah, well, you can see, you know, New York City. There's sections in New York City where you see young guys, young boys soliciting.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you know, obviously you see young women doing it too, but a lot of places you see young boys doing it. And it's sad that anybody has to do that, you know, whether it's survival for money or whether it's because of a mental issue they have, you know, caused by growing up in a certain environment. But it's just, it's sad. It really is.
It's very sad to see that.
And, you know, it's like, and you were saying also like the Native Americans, you know, the Native American Indians. It's just, they went through a lot of problems also, you know, various tribes and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just sad. It really is.
Yeah, the whole nation was raped. I was talking also about how the Nanking, the book Rape of Nanking, when I studied my own heritage, that's what happened. You know, the Europeans came with the cross and the guns. And
right,
raped the whole population, you know.
You know.
So it trickles down somehow, pockets here and there. But
Yeah.
In terms of war, there's always the underlying thing about rape of the women.
Yep. And it's sad, but it's true, you know. I know that, you know, everyone may react differently to trauma, okay? And, the trauma they've experienced. But is there a main, like, line reaction that is more prevalent than others?
I don't think so. They come in different forms, as I put in some of my brochures, that it comes out as a depression, it comes out as an anxiety, it comes out in different forms. Could be an addiction. Drug addiction, substance abuse.
Right. Do you find that
even excelling in different areas, by the way, yes, it's overcompensation of what was not there as a need, as a child need.
That's interesting. You know, do you find that some of your clients, or a percentage of your clients, also suffer from a mental health issue?
All these what we're talking about are mental issues, mental health issues. They lump it into mental health issues in terms of the psychiatric diagnosis, mental health issues. But there's a lot of components, the emotional component. We look at the human being as a whole human
right.
being. So we
right.
look at the physiological, the biological functioning, the emotional functioning, the mental functioning. So it could be that I am body dysmorphic. I look at my face, my eyes, or I'm so concerned about this for whatever reason. I'm disconnecting myself from certain things emotionally. For example, I might be going into my head I might be disconnecting from the trauma I went through when I was a child by concentrating on different activities in my head. I would probably be looking at a certain part of the room where I'll just stay there and count how many corners are there in that
decorative door or something. Yeah.
To diffuse or to disconnect myself to what happened.
Well, everybody has coping, you know, some way of coping, and this basically is like a coping skill.
Or a defense mechanism, right.
It's just that, unfortunately, I think that some of these concerns that we're addressing, don't you think that a lot of them have a deeper, underlying condition, I guess.
I think so.
You know,
and that's what I do in my practice, to go beyond the symptom. I look at depression as the symptom.
Okay. If someone comes to you and trying to come up with a hypothetical situation, if someone comes to you with, say, pornography, mm-hmm. as their passion, that's all they look at all day long, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. Now, that obviously is a problem. I mean, even me, who is not licensed, knows that that's a problem. But it also could be, like you said, a deeper problem, dating back to what happened when they were a child, or what they happened growing up, or whatever the case may be. When I say deeper, what are we talking about?
Okay, hypothetically, I would say, okay, somebody comes in with a pornography addiction. I want to kick this habit. I can't go to sleep. I can't concentrate on my work. That kind of scenario. Could it be that I am afraid to meet women? Am I socially awkward? Could it be that I was really isolated? I had this self-esteem problem. I was always put down.
Right.
That I don't know how to relate to people. That it's easy access to just turn on the computer and there it is. I can masturbate in front of that.
Right.
In front of that screen.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you have to go through, you know, all sorts of obstacles to reach it. I mean, you can go on any computer and find it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just sad, you know. It really is.
Overall,
you know, the whole situation that you deal with. I don't know. I mean, I give you a lot of credit because I think I'd become depressed if I had to deal with this every day, you know.
Yeah,
so I mean, I give you a lot of credit because...
You have to be whole.
Yeah, exactly, because I would get depressed, you know.
Right.
Just, you know, talking to all these people that have these problems, you know.
Somebody has to be at a certain level of health, you know, a degree of health-wise, how you would rate that, or happiness to be able to
right,
do this kind of
right,
thing.
Right, exactly.
And not perpetrate, I mean, not internalize what's going on. I wouldn't want to say internalize, but really have the compassion to understand what's going on in the other person,
uh-huh.
but not bring it home to say that, oh, I'm so depressed about this thing, but to diffuse it somehow.
Right, right.
Not to diffuse it in a way where I don't want to look at it, but to understand it,
mm-hmm.
and the bigger view or point of view that there's something here that I can contribute to society, even just for my little, you know,
little
corner of the world,
right.
to have an impact somehow.
It's would you speak about the specialized therapy services, for instance, like bioenergetics and prolonged exposure techniques, because I don't have a clue as to what they are,
okay.
and I'm sure people out there, a lot of them don't either.
So we, you, as we grow older, with the trauma that we have, we repress them, we suppress them, we push them down. These expressions that we swallow, the emotion, we choke it up, you know, these kinds of expressions indicate that there had been trauma somehow before. So we push them all down. So when they cannot take it anymore and there's an uncomfortable sensation inside, internally, that's coming out, mm-hmm. they can't take it anymore. Even with the use of drugs or any of this stuff, it's still the same condition. So when they come in, so there's data gathering and all that. So we tend to ask questions about their childhood, and then because I put it in the brochure or my card said I deal with trauma, they somehow already have a key for them to open up.
Right.
It's
right.
already with the card that I have. When I say trauma or sex therapy, they already have like the trust there that there's somebody here who's gonna be able to understand where I'm at. Whereas if I just talk about depression, it's just the surface stuff
uh-huh.
yet.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
when they come, they just come there, and then so prolonged exposure means to say that I can go there back to the childhood and investigate it.
Take them back right.
there, and they can choose which one. Like, okay, I only see knees. I was little. I can only see the knees of this person. They can't come first in fragments. But
mm-hmm.
when these come
okay.
as memories, they are fragments, then we go further to where it's no longer just mental memories or visual memories. Now we go to the emotional memory, which is in the structure, muscular structure, the rigidity of the muscles.
Okay.
Because if we think about it, when we repress an emotion, we tighten the muscles. So they are stored there. So that's the prolonged exposure. We go there. To that, and it's works in conjunction with bioenergetics.
Okay.
In physiological functioning, I touch upon that. So if I have, like I said, choke up, there could be some rigidity in the neck, for example,
uh-huh.
or dull eyes. They can't cry. You know, I look at the presentation of the individual, where it could be the rigid shoulders, raised shoulders,
uh-huh,
or the
uh-huh,
chest.
Right,
so, you know, I have to hold it up so that I can't. Or shallow breathing.
Right, okay. Yeah, I understand.
So if I walk around with raised shoulders, there's something going on there.
Okay.
So to go through the process of bioenergetics, we loosen up those muscles to melt it down so that it will allow the body to express the emotion.
So they can relax a little bit and,
After expressing
right,
the emotion.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You have in your folders that I was looking through earlier, you have a page on how you can get help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it says, getting you safe.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
It depends on the face of what that the person is going through, whether they're ready to separate from the abuser. There's other services in the community that they can have access to if they don't have a job. So I could hook them up with the Board of Social Services.
Okay.
There's temporary housing there. That is if they're ready, because
uh-huh.
it's very, they have to
They'd
decide.
Have to be ready, though.
Yeah, they have
right.
to be ready.
Right.
There's the safe house in Hunterdon County.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's another service that's out there.
You're talking about safe in Hunterdon?
Yes,
yeah,
the safe
right.
house, yes. That's available. Of course, the Board of Social Services has the temporary housing.
Right. Securing support. How and where do you secure support for them?
The services.
Through the social services and
yes,
things like that?
And victims' compensation is also there. If they're ready to relocate, they could have some compensation for them. That's
okay.
out of Newark. So it's a matter of applying for that service.
All right. How do you get people to impart coping strategies?
First,
in other words, if they come in with a problem, say it's BDSM or whatever it may be, how do you get them to develop coping strategies, because that's not just a 2-minute thing. I mean, you know, and in and out, and we get it, and so it's got to be some kind of a process.
Yeah, in the beginning, when they are under stress, a lot of stress, it's very critical in the beginning. I might have calls, so I de-escalate them somehow. I stabilize them. This is the situation. He's about to open or knock down the door.
Right.
So just be calm, or just go to a place somehow, somewhere to stabilize them, and just count. I mean, use the head now, because they are in a very highly emotional charged state.
Okay.
So to calm them down, and then if the aggressor calms down, if there's a way to calm down the aggressor.
Very interesting. So,
there's all kinds of combination of the situation, where they are in, whether they are ready to be able to get out, or can they hold out? Because when they go out, there's the financial concerns.
Right.
They have to go through, plus the children.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. And that's not even, I wasn't even thinking about the children. You know, I mean, just thinking about them individually.
Yeah,
you know,
just the children.
Reclaiming life. How do they go about reclaiming their life? I would think they'd have to go through all these other procedures first before
it's
they
a
can.
Long process.
Yeah, I would think it is.
Yes.
Hypothetically, somebody comes in and they're, you know, they have a problem, whatever it may be. What is there an average length of time, or is it? I know it depends on the person and how the, you know, so it's not like, oh, everybody can do it in 6 weeks. But is there, in your experience over the years, been an average length of time, like 6 months or?
You would say that this stabilizing them, having their a safe place for them to be at, it could be a couple of months, 3 months. But then we're looking at what's the emotional impact of the breakup.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I will still be longing for the guy. I'm used to this guy. I love him, this kind of, because it's a cycle.
Right.
So how will I get to that point where this is really not for me now? I'm really going to decide this is it. I won't go back. I won't go back to that situation. That's all that I had. That's all that I experienced when I was growing up. I was beaten down when I was a child. There's nothing else that I know about.
Uh-huh.
How will I describe a Häagen-Dazs, chocolate Häagen-Dazs, to a person that is really
right.
Something else. There's a different kind of life there. How will I explain this? So it's a gradual process. Whoa, wait a minute. I can actually go to shop here and there, and I was, and it's my own money.
Right, exactly.
How,
and that's got to be.
How does that feel?
That's got to be earth shattering to them, you know, when you
how
stop and think about
feel?
It, you know.
Little bits of like, oh my God, I can't.
What we take for granted, it's to them is a big, you know, major, experience.
I can actually go here and walk without the pressure of not being monitored by someone.
Yeah. And those of us who have never had that type of situation, it's hard to understand it, you know, and hard to, well, why do you accept it, you know? And it's, but you understand, you know, being involved in it, you understand why they accept it. It's because it's been inborn in them, and, you know, it's been growing in them, and it's been all they had, all they've lived with. So to them, that's normal.
That's
normal. Right.
That's normal.
And that's sad, you
that's
know.
Normal.
When you have children who have been abused, binge eaters or abused as either sexually or whatever. How do you treat them?
The child?
The child.
It's through their way of communicating, like play therapy.
Okay.
So either drawing, they draw themselves, and then another sheet for drawing themselves and the people. So there could be indications there that there's really sexual abuse there. And it's gradual that, okay, this guy is this person, and he touched my part, this part of my body. So it's a gradual process for them to be able to talk about those kind of contact.
And that's young kids?
Mm-hmm.
Like 5, 6, 7, 8? Three.
Two.
Yeah. And you and they actually can vocalize about this, or
that's why we have to use
the writing about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that I was given a presentation one time, and a group of doctors, two doctors, came up to me, and they were from different practices, and they both had said to me that they each had someone 3 years old who attempted suicide, and I said, "What?" And I just was flabbergasted. And they said, yeah. In their minds, they didn't know it was suicide per se, they said, but they were hurting so bad that they wanted it to end, and they did this or they did that. And they explained to me what they did. And I was like, you know, my God.
That's
you know.
A harsh condition. That's
yeah.
A real harsh condition.
When you're sitting there and 3 years old, I mean, come on, you know. Anyway.
That I haven't heard.
Well, I'm telling you, two different doctors from a group that was not, you know, intertwined with each other. They had separate practices, mm-hmm. you know, and they came and said it. Real quickly, if someone came to you, wanted to reach out to you for your help, how did they get a hold of you? By phone, email, both? You can give those numbers or whatever?
It's the phone or email.
All right. Yes. What's the phone number?
Phone number is 908-246-7489. That number again is 908-246-7489. And the email is info, that's I-N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, O, info at NoemiBolton.com. NoemiBolton.com.
Well, Noemi, I appreciate you being here today. Time has flown by, and I want you to come back. I definitely do want you to come back.
Okay.
Because I think there's
pleasure.
I think there's other things that we can talk about, and there's so much more. So I will be in touch with you. We will, and I mean it. You will be coming back because
okay.
you're only two doors down, so it's easy to walk to. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, and this has been NAMI's Hour. And Richard G. will be back in just about 3-4 minutes, and it'll be the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. And again, my daughter Sherry, happy birthday, honey.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
See you next week. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Some Republican senators warn Iran that any nuclear agreement it reaches with the Obama administration isn't written in stone.
Nearly every Republican senator has signed on to the letter. It tells Iran that future presidents could nullify any agreement that results from the ongoing negotiations, while Congress could make changes to it. The U.S. and Iran face a deadline later this month for reaching the outline of an agreement to limit Iran's nuclear program. Republicans and some Democrats want Congress to vote on any agreement, and in the letter, the GOP senators say without that, any deal would be seen as just an agreement between the president and Iran's supreme leader. Jerry Bodlander, Capitol Hill.
President Obama has announced a program to train and hire technology workers in an effort to drive up higher income jobs.
What TechHire is going to do is to help local leaders connect the job openings to the training programs to the jobs.
He has already gotten commitments from more than 300 employers. This is USA Radio News.
Turn down that radio!
If this sounds familiar, you know it's time to address your hearing loss. But custom hearing aids can cost as much as $5,000 each and are not covered by Medicare. The good news is MD Hearing Aid offers medical-grade, FDA-registered hearing aids for savings of up to 90% over traditional hearing aids. MD Hearing Aid was founded by a Chicago surgeon determined to develop a hearing aid that was technologically advanced, simple to use, and most of all, affordable. Call 1-800-485-4408. You'll speak with a trained MD Hearing Aid professional who will match you with the best hearing aid for your needs. Over 100,000 satisfied customers have already made the call. Call right now for our exclusive 45-day risk-free trial and get free shipping and a year's worth of free batteries, a $50 value. But you have to call right now. Call MD Hearing Aid at 1-800-485-4408. That's 1-800-485-4408.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has signed a right-to-work bill into law. AP correspondent Scott Bauer says this is seen as another victory for the potential presidential candidate.
Scott Walker made his name 4 years ago going after public sector unions, and that led to his recall election in 2012, which he won, all of which combined into making him a national Republican star and bolstering his likely presidential run.